Welcome, Shannon. Welcome, everyone. We're old school today. What year was this, Shannon? 2004, 5? Premier League soundtrack. It reminds me of.
Good old memories.
I don't know how many people can relate to this. It reminds me of John Dykes and Star Sports back in India.
Folks in India would get a little bit of a throwback from that. How you been, Sid? How was New Year's for you?
Very different. I must say,
I'm glad I wasn't the only one.
not where I thought I would be, but I'm safe and healthy, which I think is all that matters out of the year that just went by. So thankful for that. How about you?
I mean, I'm sort of numb now to what happened the last few months, but yeah, just have to dig our heels in and hopefully ride it out and start getting vaccinated soon.
Yeah, so much to look forward to, right? The vaccine and all that travel where we can go to England again and watch games again.
It's not. Hold your horses for a little bit.
Talking about England, what do you make of the last, where do you want to start? What have you made of the
I
last
want to
2 weeks?
start with how we were crying the last time we recorded, and luckily
I
we
didn't
didn't
post.
post it, so we
Now
don't come across.
you know why I didn't post, right?
So we don't come across as
What
flip-floppers.
were we crying about?
We were generally, let me try to remember. We were, I guess basically we were not happy with where United were, even though we weren't that bad at the table, but I think we weren't happy in terms of, you don't know what sort of United would show up,
Has
right?
that
And
changed though? I mean, it's only been, if you look at it, it's only been two or three good games and all of the other teams messing up,
that's
right?
fine. That's
So
and this was the huge debate we had, and you
what
know,
has
after
really changed from a United perspective?
that you're still in there, that's probably it. I mean, I don't, again, I'm not going to come out and say we're going to win the league this year, but if, regardless of however ever caveats you want to put, at the beginning of the season, if you had said, hey, in the first week of Jan, when you guys will be recording a podcast, you'll be talking about United being second, with a game in hand, tied on points with Liverpool, right? We probably, both of us would have, said, yeah, sure, I want to smoke something that you're what you're smoking, right? But so regardless of, yes, you have to take it with a pinch of salt, but you also have to agree that, okay, the last 10 months have not been a fluke, so to say. We have been lucky, but all teams get lucky somewhere here or there.
Look at
So,
us being upbeat for a change, right?
yeah, I remember why we were downbeat. I think we recorded right after the Leipzig game, and that's why
Champions
we
League.
were, yeah, and that's why, and hence we were, that's what our discussion was about. Is like, hey, what, we don't know what to expect from this United, but at least, if you tell me that there hasn't been any progress in terms of the way they play the game, progress in terms of,
I
yes,
think
we have a big hole in defense that we still need to sort out. We have a big hole in on the right side of attack, which, whoever plays there seems to partially close it, but it's still like gaping. But having said that, I think there is hope and optimism for a United supporter going into 2021.
yes and no for me. I think there's been progress since the summer, and just like other teams, not having a proper preseason hurt us.
Oh, yes.
Not Harry Maguire having all those issues in Greece hurt us.
He's been pretty
Big
good,
time.
though, to give him like
Yeah, I
some
mean,
credit last cup.
the fact that we're not talking about the United defense, it's a big deal. That's all we've been talking about for the last few years. Quietly, but surely. Every game, Lindelof and now Bailly in the last couple of games, Lindelof and Maguire have been pretty good at the back. I won't say rock solid, but pretty good. Shaw is coming back to his old self slightly from a defensive perspective. I think we're starting to see that Solskjaer trusts him more than Alex Telles. Right back, I don't know what to make of it. We've seen so many players in the last few weeks. All of them have done well. When Van Bissaka, obviously, he's good. We've seen Twan Zebe play. I don't know if it was right back or right center back.
He played right back against Everton in the previous round of the cup.
I think that's worked out well. And we now know that, you know, Solskjaer prefers to play Fred and McTominay in front of the defense. And it's actually been really good to see him play those two behind Bruno and not play Pogba. You know, speaks a big deal about the ruthlessness and bold decision making that we were asking for. And, you know, Pogba has played his fair share of minutes in the last couple of months, but he's not started that much.
No, he hasn't. And
I think Bruno continuing to do what he's been doing, there's no argument that Pogba itself can make of starting ahead of him. So I think we have a decent...
We haven't even spoken about Van de Beek.
Yeah, we haven't spoken about Van de Beek. I think we have a decent set of players that we know Solskjaer trusts. I think the front three is still a question mark. Cavani and Martial, you know, they've been rotating based on injuries. Rashford, we know, placed on the left. I think the right forward position is still somewhere. Jadon Sancho would do wonders right now. We've played Dan James and Greenwood here and there, but, you know, having Jadon Sancho there would just be... would be one of the final pieces, we need in that puzzle. Better than where we were in the summer, but
still a long way to go.
Long way to go, but I still say that we look good only because of how bad City, or not bad, but inconsistent City and Liverpool and Arsenal and Chelsea and Spurs have been. You talk about all five of the other teams performing as per their caliber, and we'd be sitting sixth or seventh again. So
that's where we disagree, and I want to say why. Because when was the last time we had five teams playing at their caliber? Tell me that.
Well, right? No, I agree. I agree with what you're saying, but for the last 5, 6, 7 years, we've consistently had Liverpool and City be up there, be consistent, which is the only difference we see this year.
Again, you know, you never have a season when there are four contenders. You never have a season when there are four contenders, right? And that's because everyone screws up at some given point of time. And that's why I'm saying we won't win, but also I'm not saying we are lucky to be there. You have to beat what's in front of you. Like, Liverpool had to beat Southampton, they didn't. Liverpool had to beat Wolves, they didn't. And United did. So that's why they have the points that Liverpool don't have at this point. But it all comes, you know, the law of averages eventually plays out. As you know, Jurgen Klopp wanted to point out in his post-game press conference that Liverpool doesn't get enough penalties as much as United does, which is laughable, to be honest. It will show. You know, at the end of the league, at the end of the season, you may have City win the league, you may have Liverpool win the league, but it's about where we are right now. And Fergie always said, like, if we are within touching distance at the turn of the year around Christmas, there's always a chance that you will do well. So let's see how this takes it. It's going to be a firecracker, the game against Liverpool at Anfield. We have the best away record in the league this season. They have the best home record in the league for a couple of seasons now. So,
and if we ever had a chance, this is it. Because they don't have a recognized centre-back who can start.
Yeah, they don't. It also, again, if you decide to start the likes of Henderson in center and not trust one of your like maybe junior players, then maybe you're just asking for trouble again.
I like how Klopp's trying to do. I think he's trying to pull off a Fergie here and there, where whenever they have a loss, he tries to deflect the attention away from the team. The last time we spoke, I think he had attacked Des Kelly on live TV, and this time he's talking about United winning penalties and not talking about how bad Liverpool played. I see what he's trying to do there, but
yeah,
I don't know how
even
it works
Lampard
as well.
Did that, yeah, and Solskjaer's, he responded in the press conference. He said exactly what you're saying is, yeah, it's just the other coaches, they want to bring up things and build a narrative, you know, which again, no one talks about Leicester getting 10 penalties in 16 games this season, 17 games, where United are a distant second in like with 6 penalties. But yeah, you've ever heard of that? No, because you know they're not really worried about Brendan coming up with his Leicester Leicester Warriors.
Leicester Warriors, I like the name. Wrapping up in United, I know how delighted most of the fans have been, but what do you have to say about Darren Fletcher joining our coaching staff today?
I'm curious. He's come on, I believe, Sky Sports or, you know, one of those channels post-game a couple of times. He came across very intelligent and, you know, tactically aware. He just didn't have the charisma that, you know, Jamie Carragher or, you know, Gary Neville have had for so long. Plus, it's always, and not just Darren Fletcher. I don't know if you read, but there were like reports of even Giggs and Keane dropping in and Carrington because Solskjaer asked them to, you know, come in. So I don't know.
Giggs and Keane are different, but Fletcher is in the same mold as Michael Carrick, I feel.
Yeah, but you remember those were the guys, Fletcher and Carrick were the two guys that Fergie trusted for all big games. Fletcher especially.
Fletcher, yeah. Park Ji-sung.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that maybe Ole is trying to create a sort of a Fletcher Carrick part two with Fred and McTominay.
Yeah. No, he's certainly trying to create the right environment. I mean, getting Mick Phelan on was the very right first step. I think he has the right people on board. So,
yeah.
I don't think he's the person for the long term. I mean, with Pochettino now at PSG, we can stop having that argument, at least for the time being. But to your point,
for 18 months.
Yeah, to your point, I think it's a transition. We can't get to where we were overnight. But I don't know. We need trophies. We need trophies.
We do need trophies. And I guess good segue into the game against City. And just the rest of the season in general. Right? Like, we didn't expect to finish third last year. We did. That was like purely on the back of a pure, you know, Bruno inspiration.
Masterclass.
Yeah. And then you just stumbled across the line when everyone was like just suffering from fatigue at the end of the season. And then the three semifinals in the cup competitions, right? I think that's where we'll probably gauge ourselves is, hey, can we go a step further now? And by step further, I just don't mean like getting to the final and losing this time, but in actually getting your hands on any of those trophies. Like, you have at this point 33% shot of winning the League Cup, but you have to get through Pep and Mourinho. Imagine that.
Yeah.
If you have to win your first trophy and that'll having to get to Pep and Jose in two games back to back, you'd have earned it, right? And not to mention you beat Carlo the previous round.
Mm-hmm.
So
convincingly, I must say.
Convincing, yeah, exactly. And then even the FA Cup, I would say, you know, and the Europa League, I don't know. That's where I think we may decide what, you know, what Mourinho did a couple of years ago.
Prioritize,
yeah. If you're telling me, you know, last 10 games of the season, league season, we are again within a game or leading by a game or around there,
I think January will define a lot of what happens. It's a lot of games that we have played in the last 2 weeks and a lot of games we will play in the next 2 weeks. So
I've loved the rotation, by the way. Like, it's been, it's been on the spot. Playing Pogba on like a pseudo left wing last game, and then the previous week he played like a number six. But at the same time, I think the undroppables are obvious. It's Bruno and Rashford. And then with Cavani still having two more games of suspension, Martial has to start. It's just a toss-up on the right wing. I have a sneaking feeling it's going to be Dan James who starts against City.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see. If we get to the final, that'll be a super boost to the players and the management as well.
Cavani reminds me of an interesting topic. We spoke about this at length last time. Of course, we didn't end up posting that. But that, you remember the last time was when the whole PSG... what team was it? Istanbul, Başakşehir. The whole incident happened. We spoke about racism at length. What do you make of Cavani's Instagram post, the three-match ban, and then... the Uruguayan FA and the entire team, and now today CONMEBOL, which is, I believe, is the South American Association.
Yeah.
All of them coming out in support of him. What do you make of the entire situation?
And I want to add how United responded as well when, you know, when the ban and the fine came out. People got to understand, yes, he used a word that might be derogatory, but... it was not in a context. And that's where the FA law is a bit lopsided. Is, you know, it doesn't matter what you intend to say through it. It matters how it can be interpreted. So, you know, people in the English FA with zero knowledge, or zero background of the Uruguayan culture will interpret that N-word as, you know, derogatory. Where, you know, people who study culture and, you know, players have come out in support of Cavani. And I thought it was really interesting when United said was, hey, okay, you know, you think we should be banned, fine, he's fine, it's okay. You remember a couple of the first game back when Millwall supporters openly booed players taking the knee, right? And you know how much they were fined? I think 8,000 or 10,000 pounds. How much Cavani was fined? 100,000. Right? There is no balance in these in these punishments. And I think the reason why so many players are coming out in support of him is because he's not a racist. And that's what United were pressing the FA for. It's like, hey, okay, you fined him, but be sure that to communicate that you fined Cavani because you thought he was racist. But he actually didn't intend any racism, right? He called, I mean, how dark-skinned is Bruno Fernandes, right? It's an obvious term of endearment, but again, it's, we talked about educating last time, but I think there's like a, two sides of education, right? You know, you can't just purely say black and white. If you say this, it is wrong. Context is important. And educating whoever needs to be educated on why it's wrong or why it not may not be wrong. Again, I'm not condoning racism, but I'm just saying in this case, they wanted to make an example out of yet another United player.
I think education is still important. This episode by itself or the ban or the fine won't guarantee that this won't happen again, right? Tomorrow you could have a Polish, a Russian, any nationality, an Indian player, where they come out and say something on social media where they're not aware that, you know, they're saying something that could cause harm or mean bad. So I think it's up to...
So exactly.
Like I said last time, I think the education has to happen in each country, every FA, every workplace, any profession for that matter, has to start, it has to happen in those countries, and it has to start early. It has to start in schools. It has to start with the kids, because that's where you can actually instill the meaning, the harm that can be caused by these words, or what is wrong, what is right. I think that's kids is where it sticks.
Exactly. So, like even Cavani, for that matter, right? Like he immediately, when it was pointed out that, hey, you know, this is wrong, he didn't wait for anyone to tell him. He, you know, took the post down. He even issued an apology saying, hey, I am not English. You know, I don't speak the language. I didn't realize it can be taken that way. Would it make more sense to educate him then? You know, make him go through some sensitivity training, then slapping a 3-game fine and a 100K fine on him? Like, what do you achieve from that? It just, he slap on the wrist, yeah, but does it really serve the purpose?
I think I know what you're saying. I think the fine is valid. I think the 3-game ban is a bit harsh. Not saying that what he did was correct. It was wrong, completely wrong. But the 3-game ban was a bit harsh. I mean, with the Uruguay NFA and now the CONMEBOL, now them openly trying to fight the FA. Let's see where this goes. But
I believe I heard somewhere that they are even going to like file a case against them in court.
Yeah. I mean, it's turned into something much bigger than what it should be, but let's see where it goes.
It's the English FA. They're just a bunch of imbeciles, for the lack of a better word.
It's a very good word you've used for them, by the way. Moving on from United, who do you want to talk about? Arteta or Lampard? Yeah.
I want a bit to both.
Okay. Let's start with Chelsea. Let's start with Lampard.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult for Lampard. Sorry.
What's not working for Frank?
I don't know. It just seems like
I ask that because I'm not surprised, right? All of the players that he bought, or at least the big ones. Kai Havertz was not going to come in and be a Bruno Fernandes overnight, right? It was it was a long-term investment. A player from a different country who needs time. Not everyone. Bruno is, I think, a one in a million case. Every player needs time. You look at Fred, and you know it's a complete flip from what he was and how he was playing last year.
You got to understand how old these players are as well. Havertz was like, what, 20, 21 now?
He's a kid, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like, first big move. Players say that they are not bothered about how much clubs pay for them, right? But it weighs on them. And you've seen it, like, time and time again. What Lampard could have done better? Is he playing Havertz where he's the most effective? Probably not, right? If you watch Havertz last season, especially after the restart, where he was just purely on fire, he played as a striker or as a number 10.
But the problem, when I've asked you this question many a time, I don't think Frank knows or what his best position is, or, you know, I don't think...
I think same for Werner. Because he started
playing Havertz as a number 10 or in the front three ahead of Ziyech and Pulisic and Mount. I think that's the problem.
Yeah. He needs to, I guess, go to what Solskjaer did, right? He has a settled back four. He needs to define what his midfield is. Kante has to play every game, right? Who's the other midfield partner? You've seen Kovacic, you've seen Jorginho, we've seen even Mount players like number 6, number 8.
You've seen Billy Gilmore for that matter.
Yeah. And then you have your attacking four where you have an idea who will play, but again, you don't know where they will play. You need to have reputation, and that's the only way you'll build.
Injuries haven't helped him, Shannon, right? Because you've seen Pulisic being injured, Ziyech being injured.
Yeah.
All of the players in the back four being injured one by one. Werner is not scoring. Abraham is not what he was last season. Giroud is the only person who's playing well, and he wants to leave. So it's almost like all the forces are against him right now. But in his defense, he's almost playing a brand new team. Mendy is brand new. Reece James is new at right back. Chilwell is new at left back. Thiago Silva is new. Zuma, it's his first full season where he's actually playing. I think Kante, Jorginho and Kovacic are the only players who were there from the last proper team. And all of the front three or four is new. So it's effectively getting, you know, 11 new players to play together. And it's not yet worked out as he thought it would. But I still think he needs time. The question is, you don't get
Abramovich,
time.
Give him that time.
Exactly. Abramovich doesn't really give time to
It's an interesting conversation. And you have to include their executive, Marina Granovskaya. I'm pretty sure I butchered that name. And you see too many reports of, you know, hey, Lampard didn't want this player. He wanted someone else, but they signed, like, Timo Werner, for example, right? Like, out of nowhere, Chelsea showed up with the money and signed him. And Lampard's all been asking for a centre-back for a year and a half now, I guess. He really wanted Declan Rice, but they spent that money on Kai Havertz. Now, again, is it the recruiting team who's pushing for signing these young players who have potential to become, like, superstars? Or almost there in terms of like
is Frank being told to play with the players he's given, or is he being given the players he wants?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, if his hands are tied and if it's hindering the way he wants the team to play, then unfortunately his head will roll, right?
Do we know the Frank Lampard way yet?
It's, I know it's like easy on the eye.
Mm.
I mean, they played, to be honest with them, when they have been on flow, they've played some really good football. But again, like, you can't have five different starting 11s if you don't have something to revert to, right? Now, I think Lampard's, I really think, unfortunately, is running out of time. He has to basically say, okay, this is going to be my midfield and my attack for the next few games. And, you know, we spoke about this offline right after the Chelsea United game, which was a drab 0-0, right? Neither team wanted to sort of lose, basically. United didn't want to lose because they had lost heavily to Spurs the previous home game. And Chelsea couldn't stop conceding. So
it was Solskjaer's best game.
And then you know, the post game between debate between Patrice Evra and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, and that still rings in my head. You know, where Evra was like, these two are like big giants and they're not fighting, you know, they should be like going to win the game. And Hasselbank said, I understand the pragmatism, I understand why both teams did what they did. It depends on where they go from now, right? And for the next few games, it seemed like his prophecy was coming, right? You know, Chelsea were having clean sheets. They were scoring at will, both in Europe and in the league.
Yeah, Mendy had like 9 or 10 or maybe more clean sheets in succession. I don't know if I'm
it was like six out of 10, something like that. But it was a pretty high number, right? And to be honest, United's defense has been not that great. We concede goals pretty much every game, but what we do is we score goals. Now Chelsea's issue right now is they're not able to score goals.
I don't think Werner or Abraham or Giroud are working out, and unfortunately the players around them have been getting injured.
And the one thing though I need to call out Lampard on that is, after I forget which game it was, just last week, right, he came out and said the players didn't run hard enough. It could have been easy for him to, you know, push the blame on the players, and he basically did that.
I think it was Man City.
No,
they just lost to Man City.
Yeah, but he did it.
Aston Villa.
Probably Aston Villa.
It was 1-1 against Aston Villa.
Yeah, and he just came out and like threw the players under the bus, right? Now, if you're trying to get that extra yard out of the players, probably throwing them under the bus not the best idea to go to. But you're right, they're just not clicking going forward. You know, you Giroud, they are a very different team than Giroud plays. And I think they have to just cut their losses, play Giroud for, you know, till they get that stability back in midfield and, you know, get those attacking juices flowing again.
What do you think is their best front three or four?
On paper, they have to play Pulisic, Werner, Ziyech. I would play Havertz at number 10. And then I would play Jorginho and Kante.
I would just provide that
midfield solidity, right?
Yeah. I'd do it differently. I would have Pulisic on the left, Ziyech on the right, Mount as number 10, and Werner/Giroud up top. I would not play Havertz.
Okay. I would play Havertz. Yeah, I think that's another thing, right? Like, you could, and we see so many of these articles whenever Pogba's on the bench. Like, ooh, they signed him for 90 million on the bench. I'm pretty sure we don't follow Chelsea Twitter.
Yeah, let's talk about Nicolas Pepe and Lacazette.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it would be the same, right? Like, you sign two players for 60 million, 70 million, and then put them on the bench. But as a manager, there's never a right answer. There's always someone unhappy with you.
Question is, do you really want to talk about Pepe and Lacazette now?
It's a different conversation than we spoke about last time. It's what, like, 3 wins on the bounce now for Arteta? The last one being pretty impressive.
Mr. Inspiration, Kieran Tierney. I think future captain, maybe.
Probably. I think the only reason he doesn't play as regularly for Scotland is because of Andy Robertson in front of him, right? But yeah, have you noticed Arsenal doing anything different than what they were doing? I think
what has changed is them being solid defensively. They've had a couple of clean sheets. I don't know who's partnering Rob Holding, but they've played pretty decent from the back. Bukayo Saka has just been an inspiration. I think what changed in the last game, I don't watch many Arsenal games, but Smith Rowe, the kid, playing as a number 10. I think that was what they've done differently.
And it's like so funny. For so long, almost like 6 months now, fans, neutrals, they've all been calling on Arsenal to play a number 10, and their number 10 sitting on the bench collecting 300,000 a week.
At home. At home.
On his couch, rather. And the moment they do start playing with the number 10, they beat Chelsea and Brighton, who have been their bogey team last season, and, you know, again, West Brom, who are, again, can make it difficult for you. But 3 wins on the bounce for the first time in what, like, a season, I think. It's to see how long they can sustain this, you know, because all these are not super world-class players. They are doing really well within the system, but their true test will come again the next, when they play Southampton in a couple of weeks. And then they have United and Wolves and Aston Villa and Leeds.
Wow.
That's some run in. That's some 5 games back to back. So, And then
I think, just like Frank and Ole, I strongly feel, no matter what happens after January, I think Arteta should be given the entire season as well.
I think you can tell
he's trying, because it takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of courage and cojones to drop Lacazette, Aubameyang, Nicolas Pepe on the bench and play the likes of Martinelli, Smith Rowe, Bukayo Saka, basically kids.
Yeah.
Who, with no experience. And, you know, he's trying to make things work. Still, still probably in Pep's shadow or considered that way, still fairly new as a manager. I think he needs to be given time. But yeah, I mean, let's hope it works out for him. Not too
and,
much.
And you know, after you know, what was a crap show of the first third of the season, they are just like 3 points behind Chelsea now.
Yeah, I still feel they need a number 10.
They
I
do.
Think I hope they don't go for another old age player, but you know, getting someone like a Christian Eriksen on a 1 year deal would do wonders. I know Pochettino is going to steal him and get him to PSG. I'm so sure. But someone like a Christian Eriksen right now would just do wonders for Arsenal. They need that, you know, experience and presence at number 10. And I think that's the missing link for Arsenal right now.
All right. Before we finish, I'm going to give you four clubs and I want you to say in what order they will finish the season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Southampton, Everton, Aston Villa, and West Ham.
Oh, that's a good one. I think our Everton will be first amongst those four.
Mm. You think Carlo's experience will guide
yes.
them?
I think then, James has been out for the last month or so. He will come back. Lucas Digne will come back. Seamus Coleman has just come back. I think there's a lot of experience coming back into the team. So they will continue to do well as long as Calvert-Lewin stays fit. What are the other options? Southampton, West Ham, and?
Aston Villa.
Aston Villa. That's a good one. Where? Let me look at the let me look at the league table right now.
So as we speak, Southampton is sixth, having played a game more than Everton,
yeah.
Tied on points. Aston Villa is 3 points further
yeah.
behind. With I'll drop West Ham from that conversation.
I think West Ham will be last.
Yeah, I think they're like
West
a bit
Ham
too
will be
one
last
dimensional.
Yes. Yes, I think it'll be Everton, Villa, and Southampton.
So you think?
Yeah,
how good has Villa been this season? It's so surprising.
I have nothing but good things to say about Dean Smith and Aston Villa in general, managing to keep a hold of Jack Grealish and getting him to sign a long-term contract. We're yet to see what he can really do this season. I mean, don't forget, a lot of the goals in the last month or two have been from the likes of El Ghazi and Bertrand Traore. So what if you have Jack Grealish scoring as well? I don't know who Aston Villa's striker is, but
Ollie Watkins.
Ollie Watkins, he's not been firing as well. He's not been
no.
the same player who they signed from Brentford, was it?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
So if they click, imagine what Villa can do. And I mean, it's a good question because right now those are the teams, right? No matter who you are, City, Liverpool, United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs, you can't go into a game with Southampton or Everton or Villa thinking you got this. So it's going to be good, but I think out of those, Everton, I think they seem like the most experienced and consistent team. And Southampton and Villa, it just seems like inspirational performances every week. But I think Villa having seen what they saw last year with the relegation battle and staying up on the last day, I think they'll easily beat Southampton. I think Southampton are overperforming with their squad right now. I must say, I think Ralf Hasenhüttl is doing really well, but I think they're overperforming slightly.
And to think that, you know, Aston Villa were one disallowed goal away from getting relegated and us probably having Jack Grealish. Wow. Things change. Small margins in football.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is good. Hopefully when we speak again, you might be a little more convinced about Ole's tricky reds. That's the hope anyway. But yeah, thanks guys for tuning in. Let us know if you'd like to comment, share, and you know, give us some feedback about what you want to talk about, something we might have missed. And hopefully we'll have one more coming out soon. Cheers.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.